The word incel gets thrown around a lot, usually after a mass killing, sometimes as a punchline, sometimes as a warning sign no one took seriously. But very few people actually understand what it means, or more importantly, how someone ends up there. This isn't just about lonely guys who can't get dates. This is about an ideology built on resentment, entitlement, and a belief that society, and women specifically, owe them something. It's about what happens when that belief hardens, festers, and finds community online. When you put all that in the wrong brain at the wrong time, it stops being a pity party and turns into something lethal. In this episode, we're going deep into that mindset with psychotherapist Siobhan Scott, someone who spent years studying violent behavior, predatory thinking, and the long, slow spiral that turns isolation into ideology. She doesn't just understand how incels think, she understands why. And that's what we need more of right now. She is also the author of this book, The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever you get books. She's about to join us. We're going to talk about how this all started from early message boards meant to support lonely people to what they've turned into now. Digital echo chambers where young men radicalize each other in real time. Siobhan explains how autism, trauma, and emotional immaturity intersect with cultural narratives about masculinity, sex, and victimhood. She also makes it clear that this isn't just a mental health issue. It's a parenting issue. It's a digital access issue. It's a cultural issue we're still not fully prepared to confront. What's especially chilling is how young it starts. We're not talking about 30-year-old men discovering this ideology. We're talking about 11, 12, 13-year-old boys buying into it because they don't know who they are yet, and the internet's giving them an identity that comes preloaded with rage. We also get into the parenting angle, the way well-meaning adults sometimes unintentionally enable the exact behavior they're trying to avoid. There's a big difference between what makes them happy and what makes them better. And in a culture that values comfort over growth, that distinction's getting harder to see. So let's get into it, because if we want to stop the next mass killer before the manifesto gets written, we've got to understand how the first seeds are planted. Which brings me to this.
Yeah, as I understand it, it was fairly benign in the beginning, and a woman was involved trying to help these guys. But it quickly devolved into this echo chamber of rage and rather bizarre beliefs that women were intentionally trying to deny men sex, that there was like this conspiracy thinking. And it attracted a certain kind of young male. And the scary thing about these groups, because there are more than one place on, you know, online where people congregate about it, is that it reinforced these distorted beliefs. So you had angry, depressed, generally autistic young men with a lot of social problems, sexual frustration, and then they come up with this paranoid ideation that women are doing things to them intentionally without recognizing, hey, maybe I've got some social skill deficits here. Maybe there are some things about myself I want to work on. It didn't go that direction, which would have been the healthy direction. It took on this mythology of victimization. And over time, it increasingly became this force in the subculture that has resulted in murders.
And that's a shocking thing about this. When I look back at childhood or teenage years, and I think a lot of us do, I mean, we can all recognize that there was always some of those guys out there that were kind of, you know, off to the side, a little more quiet. They were awkward around women. I mean, there's always going to be guys like that. There always has been guys like that. A lot of times, you know, they get dismissed, they get bullied. And look, I'm not in any way sticking up for them. What I'm trying to say is we need to recognize this sort of stuff early on and not just brush it off as, well, they're quiet. They're the geeks. They'll be rich someday. They'll be the ones that get it together. A lot of times they're not. A lot of times they, and especially today, we have a culture that that doesn't necessarily encourage moving on. It doesn't encourage finding your voice, finding your place in life. We have a culture of victimhood where people like to become victims. They like to be looked at as, oh, there's something that society is throwing at me and that's not fair, rather than let's rise above it. Why did all of that change? How did all of that change?
There seems to be this mix of what we would term clinically vulnerable narcissism, which is reinforced. And this is the narcissist who's profoundly focused on victimization. And this is a story that these impaired males adopt, because a lot of them adopt it when they're, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old. It starts very young. And I think it's the buying into that story rather than looking inward and coming up with ways that they can, you know, become healthier and have personal growth. And then the autism thing is really relevant, because I think everyone that's gone on to become a mass killer in whatever form they did it has carried the diagnosis of fairly severe autism. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think we try to intervene early. But as you say, there have always been kids that are different. Some find their path out of it. Some don't. I happen to have had a son. I won't say which one. Mm-hmm. But he was socially awkward. He was nerdy. He was a geek. He played too many hours of video games. But we were able to direct his social awkwardness into things that he enjoyed. He wasn't really athletic, but he found cross-country running. We got him into karate, gave him a little bit more confidence. We got him in, well, we didn't get him. He was attracted to, but I certainly encouraged it, the chess club. And he became the chess champion of the school district and things like that. So kids need a way to become successful rather than this perverse sense of I'm a victim here that they find in these incel groups.
How much of that just kind of comes down to parenting? And I'm not trying to blame Koberger's parents. I feel like this is an area where, look, there's just not a lot of education that we got on this, you know, as parents coming up. There's not a lot of education our kids are getting on this yet as they're growing up. But when it comes down to parenting, you have some that kind of got it, like you did, you know, and many others do, where it's like, hey, you know, yeah, they're a different brain. But do too many parents go down the road nowadays of, well, that makes him happy, that makes him feel good, versus what's actually good for them? Where as a parent, you got to go in the category of what's good for them, not just what makes them feel good. That's why being a parent is being a parent and not just letting them run their lives and hope for the best.
100%.
They need some direction there, because, everybody naturally is going to go to what feels good, and then you end up dead because you go down some sort of dark road of things that feel good and lead to chaos. There seems to be a lot of that, and there seems to be a lot of, I don't know if is it learned helplessness? In the part of parenting? Is it learned helplessness on the part of the incels themselves? Why does it feel like we just hit a brick road with so many parents and so many of these folks where it's like, well, there's just nothing else I can do about it. They're just weird. They're just this, they're just that. It seems to be that a lot of folks have abandoned their realization that they have autonomy, that they have the ability to make their own choices, that they have agency. That seems to be a big missing piece and why we keep ending up creating folks like this.
You know, the big variable that I see literally with all of these folks is the internet. Mm-hmm. And parents, I struggled with that with my kids. Fortunately, when my kids were growing up, they still had, you know, dial-up internet where it took the phone out of commission for the family. So we had to set some limits on it. But the internet now, everything is so accessible. And I think parents see their kids unhappy. And then they get into, of course, it's online gaming. And that's a huge issue. And certainly with some of these mass killers, if not all of them, hours and hours and hours spent just online in their rooms isolated, and they go into very dark places. And I'll just add the thing about gaming, it's not that there's this directional linear link between gaming and becoming violent or becoming a mass killer. If so, we'd have a lot more of them if that were how it worked. But the problem with excessive gaming and time online is that it displaces other healthy activities. But they love it. Mm-hmm. And it seems to make them so happy. And so I think parents rationalize, well, they're not out partying. They're not out doing drugs. They're not out getting into trouble. So they're in their bedroom for 8 hours a day with the door closed and half the night. You know, it's benign. And the parents don't have a clue what their kids are up to online. And that goes across the board for all kids today with smartphones, and the girls are getting into groups about anorexia, applauding anorexia, and the dangerous relationships with older men who are predatory toward kids. And that's one of the biggest concerns I have for people trying to raise kids in this really difficult to monitor environment is, you know, they're just letting them spend way too much time online.
That's a lot to sit with after a conversation like that. Because what Siobhan's laying out isn't just a clinical analysis of a dangerous mindset. It's a mirror. It forces us to ask how many of these platforms we've already seen but ignored. The quiet kid, the angry Reddit rants, the hours spent online, alone, with nobody checking in. We've seen this movie before, and we keep hitting replay. What's so striking is how much of this comes down to missed opportunities, moments where intervention could have made a difference, but didn't. Not because people didn't care, but because they didn't know what to look for, what to say, or worse, they just chalked it up to, it's just a phase. When a kid starts believing that everyone else is the problem and nothing about them can change, that's not a phase, that's a warning. Siobhan pointed out something a lot of people are uncomfortable admitting, that some of this is preventable. Not in every case, not every time, but a lot of these guys weren't born violent. They were left to fester in isolation. They were told that their feelings mattered, but not that their choices did. And over time, they got just enough validation in the wrong places to tip them over the edge. And yeah, parenting plays a big role. Not because it's all the parents' fault, but because we've been handed a tech landscape we don't fully understand. And we're giving kids unfiltered access to it before their brains are even done forming. The predators know it, the echo chambers know it, and we as a culture still haven't caught up. There's no single fix here, but maybe it starts with asking better questions. What does your kid actually do online? How do they handle rejection? What's their relationship with masculinity? Do they feel powerless? And if so, who's teaching them how to get that power back in a healthy way? We've covered a lot today, but what we didn't talk about is how many young men are quietly circling the drain right now. The ones who haven't acted out yet, who haven't written a manifesto, who aren't on law enforcement's radar. Those are the ones who have to be reached before they decide the only way to feel seen is to make the world bleed for ignoring them. Tell me what your thoughts are, your experiences in the comments section. On YouTube is where we do that. So if you're not already on our YouTube page, find us there. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you can comment away on what we're discussing. If you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it may be, please do hit subscribe there, and also hit subscribe over on our YouTube channel so you don't miss out on any of our reporting and conversations that we bring to you right here from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. My name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.